Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Sober Indians Wednesday Night Live. I'm Karen, your host, and tonight we have Trisha. I know I'm having issues pronouncing your name, but
it's okay.
I don't know why.
Cough with a G.
Okay, I'm sorry. Earlier today, I knew how to say that, and for some reason, it just totally slipped my mind.
No problem.
I want to welcome you to the show, and thank you for coming on. Would you want to tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is Trisha Goff. I live in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. I am Anishinaabe, Native American. From the St. Marie tribe of Chippewa Indians. I'm 42 years old, and I have been sober for about 2 years now, in recovery for 3 years. So the first year was rough going, so I found my higher power and, like, put everything into it, and here I am now, and I'm happier than I've ever been.
Well, congratulations on 2 years of sobriety.
Thank you.
I think that's amazing. I hear a lot of great stories come across, so I'm really interested in hearing your story and how you started your journey to recovery. So I guess we could start by talking a little bit about what led up to, what led up to the addiction, and then when you decided to make a change.
Sure. I had a pretty rough upbringing. You know, my childhood there was a lot of struggles. There was abuse. There was, you know, substance abuse, sexual abuse, a lot of trauma, poverty. Like, you know, so it was really rough upbringing. I ran away from home when I was 15 to get out of my home. So, you know, my home life was, you know, mostly my mom was a lot of the cause of the problem. And I just felt like I had to get out of there. So I ran away from home, and one of my teachers, you know, had said, you know, just come live with me, you know, that, you know, things are rough, so you can come and live with me. So I did, and she kind of straightened up how, like, the path that I was originally on, you know. She kind of, you know, let me know how important education was, how important, you know, holding yourself in a respectable manner, you know, all over the place, like, through society and by yourself was important. So, I mean, that kind of laid the groundwork, and, you know, I had a best friend whose family also, you know, showed me what a normal, like, I don't want to say normal, but, like, what a good life, you know, is, and kind of put the groundwork for a faith-based belief in my, you know, in my mindset anyways. And as I grew older, I just kind of, like, was on a good path, you know. I met my ex-husband when I was 17 years old. I was in college. Like, things were great. Graduated from college. I have two kids. I had my first kid when I was 27. So, like, I'm the first person in my family lineage, you know, direct family lineage, to graduate from high school, graduate from college, wait to get married, to have children, and then have kids, you know, at 27 instead of out of, you know, wedlock, both kids from the same father. You know, so I felt like I did it all right. And then my ex-husband, he had propositioned my daughter a week before her fifth birthday, and my world fell apart. Like, I had to leave my relationship. Like, he was my best friend. I didn't know anything that was going on. So I think that was, like, when it first started. Like, when I was going through my divorce and moving out of our house together, like, I would buy a six-pack of beer in May, and I would still have four beers at the end of September, you know, when school already started. Like, I very rarely drank. I didn't use any substances. I was just a mom. Like, I'd go to work every day and be a mom. And then after I moved out of my house, I really struggled with my mental health because I grappled with, you know, the child, you know, that my childhood upbringing, you know, and what was I was raised to be right, trying to stay on that good road. And then it was just kept being like one hit after the other hit, and slowly, you know, it started turning into just a little bit of relief, you know, to relax, to drink alcohol. It turned into, you know, full blown, you know, I have to wake up, I have to have vodka so that I can function, or I'm going to be shaken. I'm going to be, you know, seeing things or hearing things. I ended up getting a drunk driving in 2018, first time I'd ever been any kind of legal trouble. I've always been respectful of the law. I never, was anti-law enforcement. I was always very supportive. I've been a drunk driver behind the wheel. I did that in February of 2018, and then July of 2018, I got another drunk driving, and my kids were in the car, and I was out on bond, and I finally was sentenced in December. Right before I was sentenced in December, when I went to jail for the second time, for my second drunk driving, that's when I detoxed in jail for a couple days. And that's when Creator had came to me and spoke to me. Like, it was, I know that the circumstances around that was a divine intervention, and this time I was actually listening, because I was lost. I was suicidal. I was in a very, very dark place. The joy that I had was superficial. It came from drinking alcohol. So I was going through just starting my recovery, and I wasn't good at it. I didn't know where to go. I checked myself into a mental health institution, immediately got myself signed up, for to find a mental health caseworker to help me with my substance issues. And that was when I realized that I had a problem and I had to do something about it. I always kind of had this belief that, the rules never applied to me as a kid. They never applied to my mom, so they didn't apply to me up to that point in my life. And then it just hit me, I remembered, the teachings that I had received from that teacher that took me in, and my best friend and her family, and I remembered that, and I was like, those guys, I need their help, so I kind of reached out to them a little bit, and asking for help was a really hard thing for me to do, so yeah, I just reached out, asked for help from my tribal community. They offer some really good programs to help out, started going to AA. It wasn't, my whole heart wasn't into it. I was like, okay, yeah, this is a thing. I need to do this. And then when the feelings and things that I was escaping from would creep up, I would just cave and just start drinking again. So I relapsed several times during that time frame. And then the day after Thanksgiving, I ended up getting drunk again, and I got a disorderly conduct. I don't remember getting arrested. I remember waking up in jail, and I was not very happy about it. It was a really hard moment for me. A couple weeks later, I got sentenced for my drunk driving, and I was sentenced to sit 4 months in jail. So that was when I sat in jail, it saved my life. Having that time to reflect on my actions, how I wanted my life to go. I'm a mom with two kids. I'm completely responsible for them. My ex-husband, can't be alone with them, so he needs somebody to supervise him to be with his kids. So there's no way that he can take them. My relationship with my mother was very rocky, so I couldn't rely on her, for anything. I just had my niece, who was there to help me out, and she stood by my side, through everything. So, that 4 months that I sat in jail was a huge eye-opener for me. There was a program that they had offered. They didn't offer any kind of AA in the jail that I was. It took me 2.5 months to even get an AA, the big book. There was a faith-based program that was through there. And that really helped me out. I was really close with the guidance person for that program. And that really kind of helped me lay that foundation. So I was in jail. I lost my house. I lost, all my possessions. I had my health and I had my kids was basically what I had, and I had the love from my niece. I came out of jail and I didn't want to live that life anymore. So I didn't work when I came out of jail. I slept on my niece's couch for 1.5 years with my kids sharing a room at her house, and really, really focused on my mental health, why I did the things that I did. Understanding addiction, how it controls your brain, how it controls your body, understanding triggers, all the chemistry that goes on in your brain. I really wanted to understand what it was. I didn't want to just stop drinking, I remember pleading to the judge. He's like, you got a couple options. You're either going to die you're going to spend the rest of your life in jail, or you're going to lose your kids, you know, and I'm like, I don't want to die. I don't want to lose my kids. Like, I want to have a good life. And yeah, it just really developed my relationship with my higher power, who I call creator. Sometimes I call it God. And that's where I'm at.
Well, when you realized that you had woke up and you didn't remember what you did, I'm guessing that that was probably a very hard reality for you at that point.
Yeah, maybe it's like hard. I was not facing reality. Did not want to face reality at all. So waking up in jail, I was very angry. I was hateful of myself. I still didn't want to live. Like, I was just like, why am I even? I don't even see the purpose of me being in existence on Earth. I just was really, really in despair. And yeah, yep.
Yeah, I get that. I was going to ask you, because I know that you're on Sober Indians, the support group online. How does being on there every day, how does that help you as well? Because I see a fantastic group of people.
So, like, I've worked through, like, the 12 steps, you know, several times. And just over a year ago, the Wellbriety program kind of, like, fell into my lap. Our tribe had put on the program, and the administrator of the program had some issues going on, and she wasn't able, you know, to maintain a steady schedule for meetings. So, I mean, we'd show up to meetings sometimes, and the lights were out, and the doors were locked, and we didn't know where to go. And I knew her personally, so I just kind of reached out to her, and I didn't even think about it. I just asked her. I was like, is there something that I can do? Like, can I help out with this? And then I found out the building had issues, and I said, if I find a building, can we meet? So, you know, I worked together with the co-facilitator of the program, the Wellbriety program that we have here in Sault Ste. Marie, and, you know, he and I kind of brainstormed together. We were able to come up with a location and, you know, maintain the schedule that it had. And we have been meeting every Tuesday and Friday at 6 o'clock. So the Wellbriety program helped with that, but I'm on Facebook a lot. You know, I do a lot of scrolling, a lot of things, and, like, I read a lot of the memes that are out there, and I hear a lot of people's stories, and I came across Sober Indians before I was even in the Wellbriety program, and I'm, like, a lot of the memes just, like, really hit me. A lot of the stories really hit me, seeing, you know, people sharing their stories on there, you know, their sobriety time. You know, some people, you know, have, like, over 10 years or 20 years or 30 years, and some people have just a day. Like, that really inspired me to be like, okay, this is a good, wholesome group, and I need this in my life. And so now, you know, I'm looking on there every day. You know, it's always one of the top things that are in my news feed, as well as, like, a lot of my Wellbriety posts. I have to give a lot of credit to Wellbriety, too. I mean, that the Don Foyhurst program has really, really made a lot of sense to me, made me feel like I belong, and given, you know, kind of given me a sense of purpose, you know, in a way, having, you know, being a co-facilitator of the group that we have. It's really important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that's great, because Sober Indians is just, it's an amazing group. I read every day, too, so I'm constantly on the page, off and on all day myself. And I think it's just fantastic that that many people come together and support each other to the extent that they do. And it's amazing. I forgot the question I was going to ask you. I'm sorry. it has definitely been a long day, that is for sure.
It has.
I was... See, I noticed that you were talking about earlier, you were talking about that you had, there was abuse in your family as you was growing up, and then the incident with your own child. Do you think that that was what kind of started your spiral downhill into drinking, per se,
Absolutely.
Because it brought back memories for you?
Absolutely. It brought back a lot of memories for me, and I was, at first I didn't blame him. I blamed myself for not you know, because I lived through that life and I know the signs, I know all the things, and I blamed myself for what had happened to my daughter. Like I was entrusted with this child, you know, and I failed her, you know, I felt like I failed her. You know, I did not know what to do, what to think. I just completely lost hope. And at that point it was just survival. Like, you know, after that, I didn't have a plan. I just was basically surviving, you know, like I didn't have many goals or dreams. It was just like shelter, food, water, transportation, you know, that was basically it. Make sure that we have at least those things. And anything extra was just, you know, like, oh, thank God, you know, like, there's all the prayers. And I realized that, you know, Creator was with me the whole way through that journey. And looking back on it now, I can now look back, and I don't want to say that I'm glad that those things happened to me, but more that I'm honored that they happened to me, because it made me stronger, if that makes sense. Like, I had to go through those things. And I also feel like, as traumatic as it was, you know, for my daughter especially, my son doesn't remember, you know, a whole lot. He just knows that Dad's not in the picture now. But as traumatic as it was for all of us, I think it's made all three of us incredibly stronger. You know, like my daughter, she remembers what happened, and, you know, we talk about it, and, you know, she's gone to counseling, and she's able to come, you know, when she's feeling something, you know, she's able to come to me now, whereas when I was drinking, like, my kids were lost. They didn't know what to do, where to go. They just went to school, and they had their friends at school, and maybe some teachers or counselors, and, you know, they'd come home, and Mom was already, you know, Mom didn't even get off of work yet, and she's already stopped at the liquor store and is already half drunk by the time she gets home. And, you know, so and then on top of the trauma that they experienced, you know, from their father, then I also contributed to that, you know. So, like, I really had a lot of wake up when through my sobriety, and it was the hardest thing that I had to do in my life, was to just suck it up. Like, I was just like, come on, you're tough. You've been through some crazy things, and you can definitely handle this. Seeing other people's stories, like on Sober Indians, you know, that was one of the things that gave me the drive to keep going, because I see that, you know what, these other people can do it. If other people can do it, I can do it. Like, I know if I put my mind to anything, I know I can do it. Like, so yeah, like, I just really dug right in. Counseling really, really helped. You know, I was seeing my counselor every week. I still see my counselor, you know, on a regular basis, you know, even though most of the time we're just, you know, shooting the breeze. But it's like, it's very important that I keep on her, like, on a regular schedule to see her. You know, we were just talking at my last visit, you know, she's like, I remember when you came in here, she said, and you were a hot mess. Like, you came in crying and left crying. I could barely see your eyes because your eyes were so puffy. You know, you may have relapsed. Your hair was a mess. You hadn't showered. You know, and now I go in there, you know, and I'm clean. You know, I can see out my eyes. I can, you know, I'm wearing makeup, you know, because I'm not crying it off all day. You know, I've packed on some sobriety pounds, unfortunately, for that. But I'm healthy, you know. I feel good.
And there ain't nothing wrong with packing on a few pounds. That is definitely good. Were you ever able to get an apology from him for what he did for your daughter? Was that ever accomplished?
It wasn't like a direct apology, but it was on one of my drunken rampages where, like, I would just text him and rip him apart. And I saved the text, actually. I had to screenshot it because he said, I screwed up, okay? Like, I hate myself every day for what had happened. So it wasn't necessarily the words, I'm sorry. But I know, like, I knew that he truly regretted, you know, what he had done. He hasn't, you know, sought, I know that he hasn't sought any counseling or continued, you know, with any kind of self-improvement things. And in a way, it kind of makes me feel bad. But along my journey in sobriety and in learning how to maintain my sobriety and identify my triggers, I've established boundaries. And I don't enable him to do the things that he, you know, he used to be able to come over whenever he wanted, and I would be, you know, there with him and the kids to make sure that things were fine. And, you know, I don't do that anymore. You know, he can't be alone with the kids, and he's struggling to find somebody, you know, to supervise his time with them, and he, you know, wants to count on me to be that person, and I won't let him in my home. I won't let him, I won't be that person, because I can't, like, it's too painful for me, and I've already healed that wound, so, you know, I've just, that's one of my boundaries.
Well, I think you're a strong lady to have gone through everything that you have, and then to be, you know, okay, this is what I need to do, this is how I'm going to do it, and no, you're not going to do this anymore, and I think that's great that you have found your way, basically, to deal with the things that you needed to deal with.
Yeah, and, like, looking back, like, I was, like, I learned that my mom was a narcissistic. I didn't realize that until I was 40 years old. Like, I just loved my mom and just would do anything for her, and then I realized, you know, once I started establishing boundaries, like, she went off the deep end, and she did some pretty crazy things to me, and at the same time, like, it was still in the very early stages of my recovery, so I was an emotional wreck, so I lashed right back out at her, and we said some really hurtful things to each other, and done some really hurtful things to each other, and, you know, I've tried to make amends, you know, with her, and it just, it doesn't go anywhere, and so, like, that's where, you know, hard on that step to try to be like, this is where, like, I did everything, you know, that I could. I don't know what else to do, and I know that if I keep pushing it, it's just going to make things worse, so I had to let it rest, and I pray every day, you know, and I ask Creator to, you know, guide me in the things that I need to do to make, you know, to make sure that I'm where I should be with my relationship with my mother, if it should, you know, get better or worse. I mean, it's just kind of silent right now, and I'm okay with that. I finally have peace in my life.
Good. I'm glad. Where do you see yourself in the future? Where do you see yourself as far as where you want to be job-wise or wherever you want to be? It's just kind of a
silly question.
That's
definitely a work in progress because I can't make up my mind. So when I, like, probably about a year ago, I realized that, like, I love the feeling that I get from the Wellbriety program because we get people, you know, with different lengths of sobriety, you know, that are trying to walk the red road, you know, trying to maintain their sobriety and live that healthful life. And I felt really good being in a circle with those people. And, like, I just felt like I had something to contribute. Like, I just kind of let the Creator guide my spirit and the words that I would use and, you know, how I would talk to the group. It felt really good to me, and it felt natural, you know. So at first I thought, I'm going to go back to college and see what I can do because, like, I have a bachelor's degree in business administration, and I also, you know, have several certificates for medical coding and billing, office systems, like general business stuff. And I've been doing, like, you know, administrative assistant things, you know, training for it since I was a sophomore in high school. So those are, you know, things that were new to me, and I'm like, it finally occurred to me, like, I want to help people. So I thought I was going to go back to college, and I was like, you know what, my college here is Lake Superior State University, has a program, a substance abuse counseling and prevention program. I might be wrong on the exact verbiage of that, but it's something along that line anyways. And I was like, yeah, I kind of want to do that. And then I looked into it, and I was just like, it just doesn't feel right. So time was running short last fall, so I just picked up a class at Bay Mills Community College just for Psychology 101. I had taken it before, but I didn't do very good in it, so I took it again, and I did good. I aced it, like, at the end of the semester, and I didn't know what I was going to do at the end of the semester. I was like, all right, well, I'm going to go towards my master's in social work, kind of switch things up a little bit. And then I started heading in that direction, and so I picked up just another class at Bay Mills. I'm in Ojibwe 1 right now. And so a few months ago, like, I was somebody had approached me and asked me to be their sponsor. And I just thought to myself, like, I was like, you know, I didn't say yes right away, which is a new thing for me, you know, in recovery and in sobriety. I usually say, I'm a yes person. But finally, I need to think about it. And the more I thought about it, the more, like, it kind of freaked me out, like, being responsible, you know, for somebody's, you know, sobriety. Like, what if she relapses? I didn't feel like this person was where she needed to be for a true sponsor to have effect on her. I felt like she was just getting a sponsor because that's what she had to do to get through her program. I didn't feel like her heart was in it. And, you know, if I want to help somebody, I want to genuinely help them because that's what they want to do, not because, like, the court system are making them do that or the recovery program is making them do that. I see the benefit of it, but I just know myself, and I don't think that's a good fit for me. Like, thank God that those people were there for me, but I don't know, you know, that that's necessarily something for me. So then I thought about it a little bit more, and I'm still undecided on my journey, but thinking about, you know, how I felt about being somebody's sponsor, like, I kind of related that to being somebody's therapist, you know, and I'm just like, oh, my God, that's going to be my, do I want it to be my job? I didn't want it to be my job because I want to do it because I want to do it, not because I'm getting paid to do it. Like I want to, like right now I'm just a medical coder right now, you know? So maybe I will move up the line and be a biller eventually. I had to put my career like on a different burner because my job has always also been a trigger for me. So now I just like my job where I just work 8 hours a day. I go to work, I do my work on the computer, I punch out, I come home. And then my life is separate. So what I do to help people in recovery, I don't want it to be a job because I've seen myself burn out on jobs before, you know, in career paths. Mm-hmm. And then I don't want it to be like that. I want it to be my option. And as long as I have that option, it gives me more drive to continue doing it. So, yeah, I still don't know what I want to do as far as a career. I mean, like, I have, you know, a decent little job right now. And it pays the bills. It's nothing glamorous or spectacular, but at this point in my recovery, you know, like I think that's a good balance for me. It's something that I worked really hard with my therapist on as far as like, don't overload myself. So that's where I'm at.
And I think that's great because you basically, you're happy where you are right now. And I think that's a good thing. And eventually, I think you'll figure out, you know, what you want to do. And, gosh, a master's, that's great. That's a really great degree to have.
And, like, maybe I will go there. I'm not sure at this point, and I don't want to rush anything. I don't want to jump into anything. Right now, I love taking one class a semester at Bay Mills College. I'm kind of steering more towards, you know, Native studies because the more I grow in my sobriety, the more I grow in my, you know, my culture, you know, learning about my Anishinaabe background. I wasn't, you know, traditionally raised, you know, with learning about ceremonial things, healing things, you know, the way of life based upon the medicine wheel. Like, those weren't things that were taught to me, you know, growing up. And so I'm just discovering all that stuff right now. And like, that's where I'm kind of going. Like, I guess I'm just kind of learning more about, you know, life based upon the medicine wheel and the seven grandfathers teaching.
Now I'm not really super interested in knowing more about that. If you want to share a little bit about that, that would be great too.
So I think the thing that really intrigued me about it was honestly probably the co-facilitator for the Wellbriety group that I'm in. Like, he knows a lot about the language, a lot about the culture, and he always has a pretty cool story to share, you know, just basic things, you know, like the medicines that we use, you know, everything is based upon the medicine wheel. In the different directions that we have, and you start in the eastern direction, which is the white direction and represented by tobacco, the medicine tobacco, and then that also represents, like, your when you're first born, you're still learning, you know, things And then as you grow, you evolve into that southern direction of the medicine wheel, or the bottommost point. And I believe that color is represented by yellow. I could be wrong. I'm still rusty on this. Sorry if I'm wrong. But it's in the southern direction, and I believe it's also represented by our medicine stage. And usually when we have our well variety circle, you know, we smudge with sage, and we offer, you know, all the medicines in the wheel are in the direction. And that's kind of like your adolescent years, you know, as you're starting to become a young adult. Then it goes into the western direction, which I believe is represented by the color black, and the medicine seagrass, which is actually my favorite medicine because it smells so good, and there's a lot of really awesome, amazing crafts that, you know, can be made with the seagrass. And then as you, you know, get older as an adult, you go into that white, the northern direction that's represented by cedar, I believe. And that's, you know, when you develop your wisdom, you know, that you can pass on to others and become a healer and a teacher. And I've learned how there's so many things that are connected to the medicine wheel, you know, the cycle of life, you know, how you develop, you know, as a human through well-briety. I mean, I've learned that even if you didn't develop all the, you know, through the wheel, the circle, as a child, you can, as long as you acknowledge it and then pick up, you know, where you think you are, you can continue on in that cycle of life. So it's been awesome for me to learn about. And so, yeah, I'm still learning a lot about it. Just getting into my language class, I'm still pretty new in that. So I'm definitely, you know, not as well-versed as, you know, some of the people that I'm surrounded by, but I just, you know, I don't have any of the old friends that I used to have back when I was drinking, like the people that I hang out with, like I go to work and there's the people that are at work. And then I have my well-briety circle and the people that I meet there and people from, you know, the Sioux Tribe Language and Culture Department, you know, people that are very well-versed in some traditions, you know, and just want to learn more about it.
Wow. You know what? I can hear the excitement when you talk about taking these classes and the things that you're learning. You can hear the excitement and the passion for it. And it's just, it's absolutely amazing to hear that.
Yeah, it's awesome. It keeps me going, man. And it keeps me on the red road, you know, like I don't feel like I can walk the red road. Like if I were using substances, you know, or reverting back to that other way of life that I lived, like this is a whole new, it's a new me, you know, like, and it's a new lifestyle and there's different things that I do, you know, like I pray all day long, you know, and I interchange, you know, God and creator. That's my higher power. It's the same being and the same entity. Like I pray, I ask for guidance all day, you know, and I ask for protection. You know, I offer my medicine. You know, I see the traditional healer, you know, just learned, you know, where my clan was. You know, I just, my Anishinaabe name is Wawanaemayangkwe, which means howling wolf woman, and I'm Martin clan. And I can never remember the word for Martin because it's still pretty, I just figured it out about a month ago. But I don't rush anything like I used to anymore, you know, like I just kind of take things as they come. And you know what, I have so much faith in the creator in that things happen just exactly when they should happen, how they should happen, with who it should happen and where it should happen. And having that absolute faith has brought me to where I am right now.
Wow. Those are, wow. I think that's great. I was going to ask you, we have like 25 more minutes before the show ends, but I have a question. Sometimes I ask this question, sometimes, you know, I don't, just depending. But if you had somebody that came up to you that was just beginning their journey to sobriety and they were asking you, what do I do or how do I do this, what would you say to them?
Find your higher power. Determine, I don't care if it's a tree, if it's a rock, if it's a bird, you know, if it's God, if it's Jehovah, if it's Buddha, find that higher power and have faith in that higher power and trust in that higher power. And, you know, also, you know, it's not your will. Like, you're, my life is not my will. It's the Creator's will. So, like, you, like I, one of the things, like, I joke around and say, like, that's not how it worked out in my head, you know, like, when I'm kind of, like, visualizing how I'm going to, like, approach something, you know, a lot of times it doesn't turn out that way. That's my reminder that it's not my will. That's the Creator's will. And accepting that it's the Creator's will, that's, it's a big challenge, but it, I think those are some of the basic things that helped me, you know. And like, I never want to tell somebody who's early in recovery or farther along in recovery, I never want to tell anybody else what to do, but I will say what I did, like, and share my story and how I got to that point, because we all have different paths. And it's, you know, the Creator has that path chosen for you, and you have to find it on your own. And you do that by talking to others, you know, hearing their stories. I hate to say joining Facebook groups, but seriously, joining Facebook groups, you know, that give that message to you that you need to be guided in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Those are good words. Those are really good words to tell someone, I think, and to say. That's great. You're welcome. Is there anybody that you want to give shout-out to or anything to that effect tonight?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to. I would like to give a great big shout out to my best friend's mom. Her name is Peggy Gilbert. I'm sure she's not listening, but she has really, you know, set the tone for, you know, what it is to be, you know, a good woman of faith. You know, she's Christian, you know, and she's not Anishinaabe, so she doesn't understand that, but she's one of the ones that laid the foundation for me when I was a teenager. I also want to give a big shout out, you know, to my niece, who, she has no spiritual background or belief at all right now, but she's always been there for me. She's never ever turned her back on me. I definitely want to give her a shout out. I want to give Dustin Mandelkin a big shout out. Like, he's been a huge inspiration for me and his journey through sobriety, cultural beliefs. You know, he really kind of helped me see, you know, a different way of life. And I those people are really huge in helping me, you know, find the path that I'm on and stay on that path.
Yep. Let's see, 22 minutes to go. I don't know what else to ask. You've done an amazing job talking tonight, and I don't know what, really do not know of any other questions to ask you at this point.
I mean, like, I'm still, like, I consider myself still in, I'm not quite an infant in my recovery and in my journey, you know, but I'm a noob. I'm definitely, you know, very new to it, and, you know, also very open. I think that's a big thing that helped, you know, me, was being open and being, you know, willing to listen to others and their stories. That has really, you know, been helpful for me, and I'm really blessed, you know, that the Creator has given me that gift. I don't take small things for granted. You know, when I was in jail, you know, I didn't have anything. You know, when I got out of jail, I was sleeping on my niece's couch and didn't have anything. And I woke up every day and thanked God for, you know, Creator, you know, for air, for a blanket, for, you know, a roof over my head and fresh, clean water. And I still do that every single day. You know, like, those are things that are, they're crucial for me. So, I mean, like, those little things are the things that are really important to me, so I try to make sure that I acknowledge that every day.
Wow. Oh. Well, do you want to share just a little bit more about sobriety and the support group, about what you see as far as the support-wise on that page?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of I mean, the content, you know, from the members of the group is tremendous. You know, the people that are involved in that group. Being an admin, like, is also another thing, you know, that helps me see the back scenes of it. Like, and I've always, like, in my careers, I've always been, like, kind of in that, like, administrative back end kind of thing, and it helps me understand, you know, how things work. So seeing, you know, how important it is for the administrators of the group to screen each person, you know, that requests to join our group, and as well, you know, if there's any content that's inappropriate, you know, everybody kind of pitches in and reviews it together. Everybody is completely supportive. There's, I don't see, I mean, maybe I'm missing it, but I don't see, like, any anything derogatory in there. I don't know, sometimes I'm kind of naive and don't see that, but, like, no, I don't get that from the Sober Indians group. Like, I see love, and that's another big thing, you know, in recovery. Love yourself, you know, because if you don't love yourself, I mean, like, everything falls apart. That's how Creator wanted you to be. And surround yourself by that love. You know, it's hard to find. If you're coming from a toxic world of substances and abuse, it's an awkward feeling to kind of, like, remove yourself from that and find other things. But I think that that's one of the biggest things. And being in the Sober Indians group gives me that love, you know, that welcome feeling, that sense of belonging. You know, that support, I know at any time if I'm ever struggling and, like, I feel like I'm going to fall off the red road, like, I know that I can reach out on that group and I know instantly somebody is going to be there to lift me up, you know, to share their story, to encourage me. You know, I know that it's like a wholesome feeling. It's like my online family.
Yeah, and it really is. And it's a 24-hour, around-the-clock support group. It's not something that just ends from 8 in the morning till 8 at night, and then everybody's back in the next day. It's just open for whenever, you know, there's always someone on there to talk.
Yes, absolutely. If my mind is racing at 3 in the morning, I know that I can log on and somebody's going to be online. You know, like, if it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, and I'm struggling at work or, you know, something happened, I know that somebody's going to be online. And, like, I get kind of shy about, like, the posts that I put out there. I'm just kind of reserved like that. Sometimes, you know, I'll probably, you know, expand out a little bit more, but I know that when people share those things, that's tremendous. Like, and, you know, I'll be more supportive, you know, in the future and, you know, when the time is right, when I find a good meme or feel some good words to throw out there, you know, that's when that time will be. So I keep everything, you know, simple, small, and stay really true, you know, to that group. So, I mean, that's where, you know, that's where my home is, like, my heart is. I know that I can trust it. You know, I've got my in-person group, my Wellbriety group. I don't do a lot of online Zoom meetings or anything. So, you know, like, I just don't feel comfortable doing it. But, and that's just my shyness coming out. You know, once I get warmed up to something, then y'all are in trouble. But, but yeah. So for now, you know,
that's okay, just, though.
Just keeping it small, keeping it simple, keeping it in the beginning.
Right. And I think a lot of people probably do that in the beginning until, you know, they're more comfortable to do more posting and talking and stuff. But it really is it's an amazing group. It really is. And I know I've said this a couple of different times already, but, you know, to just see that love and support that it's always on that group. It's just, it's awesome. I mean, I enjoy going and reading the post every day. And
me too.
I'm always in awe of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I do love it. So, and I, like, look forward to it. You know, the first thing I do in the morning is, like, I'm an administrator on our local Wellbriety page. It's Wabanong Wellbriety, you know, and every morning either Justin or I will throw the daily meditation out there. So I look for the words from Don Coy, his first thing in the morning, and then, like, I'm looking for, you know, I pray before I open my eyes. I pray, and then as soon as I open my eyes, I can't even see. My eyes are squinty. I'm reaching for my glasses, and I'm looking for my phone so I can get my meditations and my inspiration for the day. You know, that love, you know, when you're coming out of a toxic lifestyle, you know, with addiction and abuse, you know, you don't, it can be awkward. It can be really uncomfortable. But I've, you know, the only thing that has ever made that group uncomfortable was me. You know, like, I have never seen a more, you know, loving, supportive, you know, environment. You know, when you're scrolling through your Facebook, you know, sometimes you can see some really negative things, and I try to filter all that out, get rid of all those, you know, toxic posts and people and groups. So that's why, you know, Sober Indians is like, it's whole, you know, it's wholesome. It kind of, it fills my heart with that feeling I need to wake up in that good mood every morning. Like, I'm that person that comes into work before coffee and is smiling. Like, that's me. And, you know, I owe a lot of that, you know, to my inspiration in the morning from the Sober Indians group.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think if you put everything in perspective with that, and thank you. I know that there's people out there that's listened to this show tonight and taken something from it. And I've really enjoyed talking to you. I mean, we're down to 13 minutes, and you can talk about whatever you want the last 10 minutes of the show, if you like.
Sure. I mean, I guess, like, you know, if you got to be really cautious about, you know, who you allow in your life. Like, I haven't been in a relationship, you know, in over a year. And it's not something that I did because a counselor told me to, or a therapist told me to, or anybody said, well, you need to do this while you're in early recovery. It's just like part of the journey that I believe that the Creator had led me on. And it's really lonely. It can be really, really lonely. Those are some really hard times. And those are the times that I find to be triggering and make me, you know, think, oh gosh, I mean, I always had a friend in a bottle, you know, but I don't want to go back to that way of life. You know, I've just recently, like, not even a year ago, in July of last year, I bought my own house. I've never bought my own house. And so that was really, really awesome. I'm in the process, you know, of getting my license back, you know, so I can be, you know, more independent. And like, one of the first things I think about when I get my license back is being able to help other people, you know, get to and from their meetings. You know, if, you know, like, we just had, there's a person that's in our group that just got their first place, been in recovery. And this person's been with our group for a while, and they needed some things. And I was just like, oh my gosh, like, I got an extra dresser. Like, I got some things around the house that you're more than willing to have. And I got to say that being able to help other people, when you've gone through your steps, you know, and have come to a pretty solid place in your recovery, I think that's part of the maintenance of my recovery, is being able to be there for other people and help other people that are on that exact same journey. You know, be supportive in whatever way that you can, but know your boundaries. You know, if there's something, you know, like, if when somebody approached me, you know, to be, you know, their sponsor, you know, I had to think about it, because to me, like, I take that very seriously. Like, that's like a huge, huge step. Like, I really honor and cherish and respect a person in that position. And I didn't feel like I could be that to that person if they wanted a friend to talk to. Absolutely. But to be their independent, you know, guide on their journey to sobriety, like, I just didn't feel like that person and I had a good fit. I mean, maybe if another person were to approach me and ask me, like, I might, you know, be open to that. But that particular person, I don't know how to say it, but I just didn't have, like, a feeling about it. Like, I prayed a lot about it. I put my stamina down, you know, to Creator, and really had asked for guidance. And the more that I prayed about it, you know, after that week's time, you know, I didn't hear back from her, you know, so I just kind of felt like, well, maybe she's not in a place, you know, to actually need a sponsor. I think that she was reaching out for one because
when you're in early recovery and going through, you know, your sobriety group, and you're, you know, get your last, you're that last person, and everybody says to get a sponsor, and I do think that that's important. But I think that it just wasn't a good fit for me. So I think being able to know your boundaries is also a tremendous thing to be able to do. Don't overextend yourself. I completely changed up my career path. I completely changed up my lifestyle. And that's just the things that I did for myself, you know, that were helpful. I mean, maybe it'll work for somebody else, maybe it won't, but I'd like to think that it, you know, can help somebody else make their decisions, you know, when they're faced with that fork in the road.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm not sure what I was going to ask you. I had a question in mind, and I totally forgot what it was. Oh, well. I can't think of it. But I wanted to tell you that, you know, I appreciate you coming on and doing the show tonight. It has been an amazing show, very interesting, very high energy, because I get that from you on this end. You seem like you're a very bubbly person, and I think that's just awesome. But I appreciate you coming on and doing the show tonight and talking to everyone and kind of, you know, just, I know it's a difficult, or most likely a difficult thing to come on air and share with not just, you know, one person, but many, many, many others that may be listening in on this tonight. And I think that takes a lot of strength. And thank you. I want to thank you for that.
Thank you for inviting me. You know, I was hesitant at first, you know, because I can be a little bit shy. And guarded, you know, a little bit, but like I just prayed on it, and I just felt that it was, you know, a good thing to do. I had some scheduling things that I kind of had to maneuver some things around and modify some of the things that, you know, about my night. But you know, it worked out just exactly the way it should have, you know, with exactly the people that it should have, just exactly where and how, like all the everything around both you and I are just, it's all aligned just the way that it should be.
Exactly. And I appreciate that. I'm going to go ahead, and I guess we'll go ahead and end the show for the evening just a little bit early. But
sure.
Again, thank you. You did an amazing job, by the way. I enjoyed
thank you.
Listening to you. You're welcome. And I wanted to tell everybody else, you know, just thank you for listening, and hope somebody took something from your story tonight. And join us on Saturday evening at 10 p.m. for another show. But
you
have an amazing night, and hope everybody else has an amazing night too. Thank you.
Thank you guys very much.
You're welcome. Have a great night.
You too.